I'm teaching people how to be their scientists. You are going to be the scientist of your joy. You're going to understand that the science of your happiness better than anyone else.
Welcome to The Lavenderit Lifestyle, the podcast on personal growth and lifestyle design. My name's Eileen, and I'm here to guide you to shine as your brightest self and create your dream life. We all have a light within and the power to create a life we love. Every Sunday, we'll share thoughtful conversations exploring how we can build a better future for ourselves and our world. Life is an art. Make it your masterpiece. Hello, my loves. Welcome back to the Lavender Lifestyle Podcast. It's Eileen. In today's episode, we explore something that's truly detrimental but goes unnoticed: high-functioning depression. How so many of us get caught up in a life that feels dull and numb, pushing ourselves to stay productive and pushing down our feelings. Whether you've experienced this or you know people in your life who've experienced this, it is too common. So we'll talk about how to shift to taking better care of ourselves and ultimately how to reclaim our joy. We learn about the science of happiness and how we can all learn to be better human beings, not humans doing. Our guest today is Dr. Judith Joseph. Dr. Judith Joseph is a board-certified psychiatrist and researcher who specializes in mental health and trauma. Her debut book, High Functioning, Overcome Your Hidden Depression and Reclaim Your Joy, is the first of its kind on high functioning depression. Hello, Dr. Judith. Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. I know you have a very busy schedule. Your story is really incredible, like coming from Trinidad and becoming a leading psychiatrist and researcher. Tell us a little bit about your journey and what inspired you to go into mental health.
Well, you know, I think that many of us come from immigrant backgrounds, or our parents were immigrants, and we tend to work, work, work. We want to be grateful for what we have. We don't want to miss out on opportunities. And I'm from that immigrant background where you made it to this country, don't complain, push down your feelings, excel, and everything will work out. And I wish it were that true. I wish that were the case. But many of us actually hide our emotional struggles behind the mask of productivity. And I was one of those people who did that. So I was like the good kid, the good girl, straight A's, valedictorian, you know, getting into wonderful schools. But I found myself at a point where all of these accolades, all of these achievements, they weren't really giving me a sense of purpose and meaning. And I had to get back to who I really was, because I got lost in it all. And I think many of us don't process our past trauma. We just push through it. We push through our pain. We are humans doing. We're not humans being, right? So we are pathologically productive. And it's a coping mechanism that we use to avoid trauma. It's a trauma response. And if no one points it out to us, then we just continue this way until we die, right? And so, you know, a part of my work is understanding why people are pathologically productive, how they develop something called high functioning depression, and how to help them heal through it.
Yeah. What was the turning point for you? Did you have like an aha moment realization where you're like, this is not the life I want to live, let me study this? Or I guess, what was that for you in your story?
Well, you know, I've had many aha moments, but one that stands out for me is in 2020, I was giving a talk to a major hospital system, and I was supposed to be the voice of calm, the voice to help them through something that was uncertain. And halfway through the talk, I realized, wait a second, I think I'm depressed. Like, it was a shocking moment for me. Mind you, I'm a board certified psychiatrist. I researched depression. Like, yeah, you know, you would think that I would know what it was like. But, you know, on the outside, I was showing up for my family. I was, you know, being an entrepreneur, showing up for my team, showing up for my patients, being the voice of guidance for like this large hospital system. Yet I was struggling. And I didn't feel like I could slow down. I felt like I had to keep doing. On the outside, I was like really crushing it at work, you know, but on the inside, I was really struggling. So I thought, how many people have this similar experience that I have? How many people are struggling and no one knows it because they're hiding behind a mask of productivity? And in my research, when I study depression, and I use this Bible of psychiatry called the DSM, which is a diagnostic and statistical manual, you know, you have to have all these symptoms of depression. And then if you continue to function, if you don't lack functioning, if you don't have significant distress, then they're like, you know what? We'll see you in a year or come back when things really break down, right? And I just thought that was a broken model. Like, you know, why are we waiting for people to shut down emotionally? Why are we waiting for them to physically have a breakdown? Why are we waiting for them to burn out or develop a substance use issue before we intervene? And I think it's because a lot of doctors or people in healthcare are struggling with hidden depression. I think they, you know, show up for others. They show up for their team. They don't want to let anyone down. Their whole identity is wrapped up in their role. And so if you're that way, then how is it possible for you to identify this as an issue in your patient? You're going to say, well, you're fine. You're just like exactly. me. Come back, you know?
Exactly.
So I think a lot of people struggle with this and they don't necessarily get the help. And I wanted to provide help and tools so that people don't have a low functioning clinical depression, so that they don't break down physically, so that they don't develop unhealthy coping mechanisms. I want them to start to identify what it is that's causing them to feel so empty and restless when they're sitting still, why they have to continue being busy, and give them permission to slow down and to utilize skills to process that pain so that they can, you know, have sustainable joy.
Yeah, define depression and then define high functioning depression.
Clinical depression has specific symptoms. So for example, they may have symptoms like poor sleep, poor appetite or changes in appetite, guilt, hopelessness, poor concentration, feeling like physically lethargic or the opposite, restless, the low energy, having like, you know, something called anhedonia, which is a lack of interest and pleasure, low mood, you know, and tearfulness and so forth, and hopelessness as well. And so those are the symptoms of depression. But in order to meet criteria, you have to have these symptoms. They have to have lasted for at least 2 weeks or more. And on top of it, you have to lose functioning or have significant distress. The problem with that is that many people cope with their pain by overproducing. So they don't lose functioning. They're actually overproductive. I call it pathologically productive.
Yeah.
Also, another thing is that, you know, let's say you don't necessarily tap into your feelings. You're not someone who acknowledges or validates your feelings. And you push it down, you're not necessarily going to say, I'm in distress, right? So those are the two things you have to kind of tick the box to meet criteria for depression. And if you don't, then you may have all these symptoms, but you don't fit neatly into this box. So then we can't diagnose you. We can't treat you according to the medical nomenclature, right? We can't support you, right? You come back when things are really broken. And I just thought, well, why are we waiting for that to happen? Like, it doesn't make any sense. So we're going to wait for you to be in distress. And in some cases, some people with high functioning depression actually, you know, end up taking their lives and, you know, dying by suicide. And so why are we waiting for that? Why are we waiting for people to break down physically or mentally? Why don't we give people the tools to address it so that they can start to heal and, you know, regain pleasure out of life? Because we're all built with the DNA to have joy. We're built with that dopamine. So we're supposed to be joyful. So why is it that so many of us are walking around so numb and blah with anhedonia, right? And let's give people the tools so that they can cultivate their joy so that they don't ever have to break down or prevent this from happening.
So to me, it sounds like high functioning depression is just, you have all those symptoms, except you're still functioning. So it's like the doctors can't help you because everything looks like it's going well, but internally you're still breaking down. You're not feeling joy. And are you saying we just haven't been able to deal with this in a proper way, like in an effective way?
We haven't addressed it, period. We're so busy looking at people who have broken down, who have lost functioning, who are in distress, that we completely ignore everyone else. And it's not to say that it's not important. We have to take care of people. But, you know, when you think of what's happening now in healthcare, it's all about prevention, 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 right? The shift has totally changed, right? Rather than, well, let's try and treat cancer, let's try to prevent cancer, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, let's try and treat heart disease. Let's try to prevent heart disease. Let's try to prevent stroke.
Absolutely.
But we don't have that mindset when it comes to mental health. We're still stuck in that old archaic method of, we'll come back when you're in distress and when you've lost
functioning. Yeah, fix it when it's
broken. Yes. Yeah, and I think we're in it. We're seeing the worst mental health crisis we've ever faced, and largely due to the 2020. So we know that the warning signs are there. We know that people are reporting higher depression and anxiety. So what does that inherently tell us? That people are also suffering from the symptoms of depression and anxiety, but they haven't fully broken down yet, right? So that number is probably getting bigger as well, right? Yep. So let's try and prevent this. Let's try to do something to reduce risk. And that's why I use this very controversial term. You know, a lot of therapists will say, well, I don't like that you're classifying low and high, and like, you know, like it just makes it seem like one is more important than the other. And I just said, well, okay, well, how do you want to classify it? Because the way it is set up now, the people who are high functioning, they're not getting support. They're not getting tools, right? So we have to classify, we have to use terminology. And it's a way to ring the alarm that we are missing the boat on something that we could really prevent.
Yeah. And to me, just, I think it's common sense. Just hearing you describe it, I'm like, oh, it makes so much sense. There's so many people living that way. Time for a quick break for today's sponsor, Shopify. Some ideas have a way of staying with you. They appear when you're journaling, taking a walk, or in those still moments when you're simply being. They whisper, what if you actually went for it? That's how Lavender came to life. Not with a perfect plan, but with an intuitive feeling that said, this is it. When the time came to bring that vision to life, I needed a space that felt safe and supportive. That's where Shopify became the foundation, a space where ideas could grow freely. It gave us the freedom to explore, experiment, and build something true to its core. And the best part? Shopify takes care of the tech so I can stay in my creative flow, creating and connecting with all of you. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout we use with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/TLL, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TLL to upgrade your selling today. That's shopify.com/TLL. Before we go into how to prevent and heal it, like, can you give us like the signs of high functioning depression? Like, just so someone knows, oh, I see that in my life, or I know someone like that in my life.
So they're very similar to those of depression. So, you know, you're not getting good sleep. So someone who wakes up before the alarm because they've got all that anxious energy, or they're just so stressed and burdened emotionally that their bodies can't get into deep sleep. And we know sleep is a signifier of so many things. It is really hard to be physically and mentally healthy if your sleep is disrupted.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other sign is what you're eating. So a lot of times people are running on no calories whatsoever. They're just like chugging the coffee. They don't make time to sit and eat. If they do eat, they're like taking very little bit, or they're not getting nutritious foods. Feeling guilty, like nothing is ever enough. You're constantly people pleasing because you feel as if you're going to let people down, right? And that core belief drives you to be overly productive, to constantly show up, even if you're tired. And even if you do feel drained, right, and exhausted, you still go. You still keep moving, you still keep pushing. You invalidate how you feel. The other thing is that, you know, you may like actually still continue having all these roles, but you're not doing them as well as you used to because your brain is just so fatigued and it's hard to focus. And you may not necessarily identify with sadness, but you feel numb and blah, like, meh. And that's anhedonia, a lack of pleasure and interest in things that used to really light you up. You know, like say you're with your partner and you know, you're intimate, but you just can't wait for it to get over. Or like you're eating your favorite meal and you're just like it's not that good, you know, or you're hanging out with your friends and you're like looking at the watch, like, when is this going to be over? And you used to enjoy that stuff, right? Or like, you know, you used to really enjoy time with your children, but you find playing with them a bit laborious. And so like you end up doom scrolling at night, looking at their pictures instead of actually interacting with them. So, you know, it takes the joy out of life. And, you know, it's a sneaky symptom. A lot of people don't even realize that it's a medical term that's been around for over 100 years, but anhedonia is, I call it the sneaky joy thief. It comes in the middle of the night and robs you of your joy. And if you don't identify it eventually it can lead you to a major depression. So it's important to cultivate joy, but doctors are not in the business of cultivating joy. They're in the business of eradicating depression. And I want to shift that. We should be cultivating joy.
I love that. Let's shift the conversation to how to prevent like getting so bad, you know, how to prevent going down this long road. It seems to me that so much of this high functioning depression or traditional depression is from a lot of our childhood traumas and the beliefs that we have. As like people with immigrant parents, I totally understand so much of us are wired to push ourselves no matter what, to sacrifice no matter what, to push down our feelings. So talk about what you've learned and what you've seen in like the studies.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought up the immigrant background and pushing your feelings down, because if you were never taught to validate and also to vent, right? I have my methodology, the 5 E's. If no one taught you how to do that, then you just do what your parents did. You push down the pain, the discomfort, and you just do, right? Many of us have unprocessed trauma. And even if we didn't come from scarcity, let's say in our generation, if your parents came from a scarcity where, you know, you experience things like not spending because just in case the money ever ran out, or hoarding things that may even be expired and unhealthy for you, but still eating them because you're afraid of running out of resources, or, you know, being afraid to take a risk on yourself, right? Being risk averse because, you know, you want to play it safe all the time because, you know, someone before you ran out of resources. So let's just stay in our lane and be unhappy and stay in a career that doesn't satisfy us, or staying in a relationship, you know, that is unhealthy and even toxic because you don't want to, you know, deal with the financial issues that divorce carry with them. But even if it's unwarranted, right, maybe, you know, a divorce actually wouldn't lead to financial ruin for you, but you're just so afraid of taking these risks that could actually improve your quality of life. All of that feeds into these pathologically productive people who put their joy on the back burner to show up for others, to continue working, to continue being productive. So understanding your family history and your generational trauma can be so powerful, because many of us need to understand, how did I become this way, right? Rather than something's wrong with me and I'm broken and unfixable, what happened to you, right? That's a shift. Like, something happened, and this is why you have these behaviors. This is why you think this way and behave this way. So that could be really powerful. And like, you know, a lot of my work deals with helping people to go back in time to understand that moment in their lives when all of this happened, when that shift occurred, and how that impacted the way that they see themselves in the world, the way that they interact in the world, and the way that they view the world and circumstances.
What were the 5 V's that you talked about? You mentioned it, but let's go into them.
It's a methodology because I want people to have actionable tools to reclaim their joy. So the first V is validation. Acknowledge how you feel and accept it. Many of us don't acknowledge how we feel. We're taught that we're just lucky to be here, that, you know, don't, what do you have to complain about? You have everything. You have more than I had, right? But the truth is that there's a reason we're built to have emotions and to have a plethora of sensations, because we're supposed to acknowledge these sensations and these experiences. It does something for us to make us human and whole. And so acknowledging your emotions and your experiences and accepting them is very powerful. It's often the first step. For example, someone may, you know, be hesitant to take a vacation or hesitant to say no at their job, but it's because they didn't acknowledge that their whole self-worth is tied in their role, that they feel like if they ever say no, they will no longer be valued, that they will let others down, that they're people-pleasing, right? But acknowledging that and accepting that this is how you are is the first step in change and creating different choices for yourself. The second V is venting. Once you've acknowledged how you feel in your experiences, how are you expressing it? You know, some people are more comfortable with, you know, verbal expression, but many people are not. They're more comfortable, let's say, praying or crying or singing or even writing. And so figure out what works for you and what feels authentic and express it that way. And the third is values. So I always say that values are things that have, that are priceless and not with price tags, but we are taught often to value things that, you know, other people can see, materialistic, signs of wealth, accolades, achievements. But at the end of the day, you know, in our last days, we're not going to be like, I wish I got that big house, or I wish I had a second car. You're going to think, you know, I wish I had more time with the people that I love doing the things that I love, you know? And then the fourth is vital. So like every doctor will tell you this, make sure you're getting good sleep, good movement, good diet. But I stuck in additional vitals in there, like the quality of your relationships, because, you know, the longevity science shows us that the quality of our relationships are the number one predictor of our happiness, our longevity, our outcomes. So really think about that. And I also stuck in there another vital, like your relationship with technology. You know, like we are not aware as to how having this constant exposure to tech and devices, how that impacts our mood and our behaviors, right? And then the fifth is vision. Like, why is it that we don't schedule joy, right? We schedule everything else, right? I scheduled, you know, my checkup. I scheduled, you know, when I have to meet with my accountant, but I haven't scheduled joy. And many of us, we're just always on to the next. We're not planning joys, and we don't celebrate our wins. So we don't even schedule time for that. So like, you know, today, you know, I worked late. I'm talking with you. So I'm going to schedule joy later. I'm going to have a delicious meal, my favorite food, sushi, and I'm going to put my feet up and watch something completely mindless, right? Because it's the night that I don't have my daughter. I co-parent. So, you know, schedule the wins because it keeps you moving forward instead of being stuck in the past.
Mm-hmm. So that's your whole framework for helping people like deal with their high functioning depression and get out of it. Can you repeat the five V's just so we have the summary?
Yeah. Validation, accepting how you feel. Venting, expressing how you feel in your experiences. Values, tapping into things that are priceless, not with price tags. Vitals, you know, taking care of your body and brain because you only get one. And vision, how do you plan joy so you don't get stuck in the past? And I think this framework is super helpful because guess what? You don't need a lot of money for it. You don't need to go out and derail your life. You just have to tap in to what we're born with. And that's why I like five, because we have, most of us have five fingers, right, on a hand. Some people are different. That's okay. But I like the fact that it's five because you just need one hand for it, right? And it reminds you that you can tap into any one of these things to increase your points of joy. You don't have to do all at once. Yeah. In fact, with my clients, I'll say, let's focus on one and let's really get one really, you know, honed in on that one and start to practice it daily and watch your points of joy increase. And the reason I say points of joy and not you're going to be happy is because in the science, when we look at happiness, we actually measure happiness based on a bunch of points, a bunch of sensations, a bunch of experiences, because again, we're humans. We have a plethora of experiences, right? Happy is just one emotion, right? But the science of happiness shows us that it's all these points added up that makes a person truly happier.
What do you mean by points? Is that just like different feelings? Like, oh, I have like an exciting feeling or a different, my body feels good or, okay.
For example, on a rating scale that we use, one will talk about mood. One will talk about how you look. Another point will talk about your interactions. Another point we'll talk about your sleep. Another point, we'll talk about your appetite. So these are all human experiences that are all on the happiness scales that we use in research. But you rarely find the word happy, right? It's counterintuitive because patients come in, they're like, I just want to be happier. And doctors and researchers are like, we just want to like decrease your points of depression, right? So I had to reframe it and say, you want to get as many points in a day as possible. So if you're feeling tired, get rest. If you're hungry, eat a good meal. If you're lonely, connect to someone. You know, if you're feeling anxious, do something to de-stress. These are the points of joy, right?
Yes.
But many people think they're coming and they just want to be happy. And when they imagine happy, they think, well, that means I'm going to finally be settled in my career, have a partner, have a house, have all these things. Some of us will never get that. Some of us will never get that, right? So how do we hold on to the points that are within reach, right?
Yes.
I think about the points in your hands and reach because we're all built with the DNA for happiness. You can try and grab as many points as you can in a day. And that is the scientific definition of happiness. That's the science of your happiness. But if people don't know that, they're never going to be happy because they're chasing this elusive thing that is not even evidence-based. And so, you know, a part of my work is to demystify this, to democratize the science so that people feel as if it's within reach and to get people to understand the science of your happiness, because this is important. You know, there's only ever going to be one you, only one you ever in the history of the universe and only one you ever in the future of the universe, right? So understand the science of your happiness. What is it about you that is different, right? Mm-hmm. And tailor the five V's to you, right?
Yeah.
And that can be extremely powerful because, you know, knowing that you're the only person ever to exist like you, that means you're here for a reason. So let's make your time on earth valuable. Let's try and get as many points of joy in a day as possible.
Time for another short break. This show is brought to you by BetterHelp. It's easy to think of therapy as something you only need when things feel off. But what if it could be part of a more balanced life? Whether you're new to therapy or already using it, BetterHelp makes it simple to prioritize your mental health. With BetterHelp, you pay a flat fee for weekly sessions, saving both money and time. Licensed therapists are available online, so you get support whenever you need it, whether for quick check-ins or more focused sessions. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 5 million people globally. Your well-being is worth it. Visit betterhelp.com/TLL to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TLL. Yeah, I love that so much. And just hearing you talk about the five V's, it doesn't have to apply just to people with depression. It applies to all humans. It's literally everyone needs to know this because this is how you live a joyful life in the everyday. You know what I mean? It's not even, you don't look at this when you're sick or depressed and you absolutely, like you look at this as any normal person. We need the connection. We need to validate our feelings. We need to have joy every day. It's so, on one hand, it's like so simple, so common sense, but we avoid, like, why do we ignore it in our society?
And remember, people say you don't have depression, right? High-functioning depression isn't real. So technically, it is about getting the science of your happiness because you're not going to get this anywhere else. No one's going to sit you down and say, let me show you how to be happy. Let me help you understand your science because you're not sick enough, right? You're not low functioning, right? So that's why we have to talk about these things so that you can grab onto these points every day.
Exactly. You're making it very like practical and applicable. But I guess in a nutshell, it's just about learning to take better care of yourself, like listening to yourself. What do I need? And then what brings me joy? How do I incorporate that into my life?
I'm teaching people how to be their scientists. You are going to be the scientist of your joy. You're going to understand that the science of your happiness better than anyone else. You know, many of us, if you ask someone, what is it that you want in life? That can be the most difficult question for people. That is a stumper. Like if you want to stump somebody, put them on the spot and ask them that. So many people will say, I don't know. I really don't know. I thought I knew. I feel lost. I feel empty. And it's because you don't know the science of your happiness. You don't understand what makes you special, which makes you different and unique. And once you start to tap into that, it's almost going to be like a light switch. Like, you know, and I went through this myself. You know, I was, you name it, like if you look above, I have so many degrees, awards upon
You're
awards.
Productive. Absolutely.
Accolades.
Yes.
An immigrant parent's dream. In fact,
absolutely.
I used to say,
you are a star.
Judy is the one girl we don't have to worry about. But you know what? Judy got married, Judy got divorced, Judy started to fail, right? And it gave me this new perspective, like, what is it that I do for me? Do I even know myself? Do I know what makes me happy? And I really had to tap back into the science of my own happiness. And that's why I'm so passionate about this work, way more passionate than I was about it when I first became a psychiatry resident and when I finished training and became a new researcher. I'm passionate because I've lived it and I know it can change lives. I know that, you know, anhedonia and lack of pleasure is contagious. If you've ever had a boss that was just like mean and irritable and unhappy, it spreads. And when you are joyful, it spreads too. So we could literally make the world a better place by increasing joy and happiness. But people need to know. They need to know how to do it and they don't have the tools.
And it's so helpful because you have the scientific background and you're looking at it from the clinical angle where it's, I think some people need that. Like it just, they trust it. So you said that you've also done this in your life. A lot of people struggle the most with, I guess, changing their beliefs, the framework in which they view the world. How do you help people through that so that they can go from who they were before to the new joyful version of who they want to be?
I spend a lot of time with validation. It sounds so simple. Oh, yeah, I could do that. I could talk about my feelings. You'd be surprised at how difficult it is, you know? And, you know, in some cases, it's so hard for people to acknowledge their feelings that I have to like literally put a paper in front of them with different faces and say, like, let's pick the one that's closest to you. Aww. Similar to what we do with children, right?
Yeah.
Because if you're in this constant mode of everything's fine, everything's okay, I just get through it, and you don't really sit still enough to really tap into how you feel, you may need a lot of help, right? Getting to just identifying the emotions. And then let's say you finally are able to do this through some of the exercises in my book. Expressing the feelings can be very challenging, right? Imagine if you're someone who's struggled with low self-worth and your whole identity is tied up in your role. It's hard to say to people, you know, I need help. I'm tired. I need a break. I need to slow down. It may feel like a personal failure. So in these cases, you know, I have to work with slowly exposing yourself to this idea. So it could look like venting to yourself initially, right? Like looking in a mirror and saying it out loud, or expressing it in writing, or writing a letter to your younger self, you know, and saying, you know, like, you didn't have to be perfect. You know, they would have loved you anyway, right? There are all these exercises that I provide because it is a slow process and it can be very challenging. But the first two V's are where you really want to start if you're someone who has a hard time letting go. And then the values part, you know, like there are so many times people don't even know what they value. Like recently I spoke to someone who, you know, really couldn't remember their childhood. And I have to educate people that forgetting your past is a trauma response. Your brain will, you know, dampen your memories so that you don't remember things that are painful, right? So that you're not triggered. And I have to work with some clients to get back to that point when they did value things. Like, and it's usually before a traumatic incident, like the loss of a parent or the, you know, divorce of a parent or like a family tragedy. And when we find out, you know, what they valued before that incident, then we start to work slowly with that person to get back into that. So for example, I worked with a client who they didn't remember what they really valued. They were in a high powered job, making a lot of money. Why aren't I happy? I have everything. Why am I not fulfilled? Well, it turned out that there was a time in their lives when they had scarcity trauma and they didn't have much, but they were still joyful. And what they did when they were like much younger, when they didn't have much, was they spent a lot of time with other people who didn't have a lot. So they had kind of lost that sense of community. You know, they were part of a community where like all the kids didn't have much, but they didn't need much. They would play with like boxes. They'd play with trash, yeah. Essentially. Stay out late hours of the night playing, you know, in the street playing sports when it was safe. But they lost that. Now the friends that they had were all, you know, people who cared about money, who cared about status, who were like very superficial. And they just didn't feel as if they were around people who were really real. And so I had to work with this person to try and rebuild their community. Because again, relationships are the number one predictor of your long-term happiness. So if your relationships are toxic, if they're unhealthy, if they're shallow, then you feel empty, right? And so I had to work with this person to try and either reconnect with these childhood friends or to find like-minded people who were not all about bling, all about, you know, the hustle and the perceived status, who were actually about community and connection and meaningful connections that mattered.
Yeah. How do you work with someone and find out like the one thing that they should focus on? For example, that person, it was community. For someone else, it might be like a hobby. Where do you start and how do you find out that, like the priority?
You know, early in my book, I talk about the biopsychosocial. So one of the easiest steps to understand the science of your happiness is to understand this, your basic science, right? And in medical school, we learn about the biopsychosocial. It sounds fancy and hard, but it's actually quite easy and brilliant. And if you think about yourself as a human being, biologically, you know, your biological factors are going to be different than mine, right? I have, for example, I have hypothyroidism, a low thyroid condition, right? So, you know, sometimes I'm going to be tired. Sometimes my thyroid will make me anxious, you know, but other people may have other conditions like autoimmune diseases, right? Psychologically, I have different traumas than another person. So I have a history of scarcity trauma and also personal traumas, whereas another person may have a past history of, let's say, you know, physical trauma or like a motor vehicle accident or even combat, you know? And also within psychological of the biopsychosocial, there's attachment style, right? Some people may have avoidant attachment, anxious attachment, mixture of anxious avoidant or, you know, secure. And there are other resiliency factors within your psychological background. And then socially, you know, I'm in New York, you know, you're on the West Coast. So we're in different social settings. You may have more access to nature. I have access to a city, you know, I have a busy job. Some people are in, you know, workplaces that are toxic. Some people are in relationships that are toxic. Some people have sedentary behaviors or diets that are not healthy, right? So your social factors are important. So when you understand the biopsychosocial that's unique to you, right? Because the science of your happiness matters, then you know where to start. So if someone has heavy biological factors, let's say they have an autoimmune disease, I may want to focus there and say, let's focus on your vitals, right? Of the five E's. Let's get you plugged into a good medical team. Let's make sure that, you know, you're on the right biologics to help decrease the inflammation, because inflammation worsens your brain and your body and your mental health. And for that person, I may also want to focus on the social, right? The social part is like eating and movement. Maybe they need to work with a trainer. Maybe they need to work with a nutritionist to eat low inflammatory foods, right? So I'm not going to be like, well, let's process your trauma if your biological factors are what's really impeding your happiness, right? So in that case, I would say, you know, let's use the five E's to support you biologically, right? But in another person who doesn't have the biological, you know, factors that are very stressful, who has a heavy, you know, trauma history, you know, I'm not going to be like, let's focus on your social and let's give you kale, right? Like, let's work on your diet. I'm going to say, let's work on that trauma. Let's start processing the trauma so that you're not always in fight or flight. So you're not always like ready to go throw down with someone who you perceive as being, you know, disrespectful, when they actually maybe they weren't, right? But you're in fight or flight. And for someone who, let's say they don't have any biological and their trauma history isn't that heavy or that, you know, but socially, they're currently in a toxic work environment that demands of them everything, right? Let's say they work in a hospital and they have to be on call all the time and they're, you know, treated poorly and they don't eat. Well, I'm going to say, well, let's maybe focus there. Maybe we need to figure out what you value in life, right? Let's figure out why you went into healthcare. Because if you went in to help people, but you're actually feeling as if you're not really helping people, you're in a broken system, you need to shift gears, then we need to work there, right? So everyone's going to have a different biopsychosocial, and you could use the five E's to target the areas of your biopsychosocial that is tailored to you. Again, because you're the only one who will ever exist the way you are. And it's a way for me to bring the science to you so you can literally be your own scientist in your healing journey of understanding the science of your happiness.
Amazing. Yeah, the way you lay it out, biopsychosocial, I love that you're giving us frameworks for understanding like our story, how we are different from others, and everyone's solution is a little different. Before we dive in, I want to share something that could truly shift the course of your year. Spring is here, and it's my favorite time of the year and the perfect time to renew your intentions, reset, and refocus. The Artist of Life Workbook is the perfect tool to guide you through this journey. With inspiring prompts for self-reflection, self-love, goal setting, and accountability, this all-in-one tool helps you design a life that feels aligned and fulfilling. If you're ready to transform your life, you can grab your copy of the Artist of Life Workbook at shop.lavender.com and use the code TLL20 for 20% off, exclusively for our podcast listeners. All right, let's go into the episode. Another question I have for you. So say a listener has someone in their life that they know is struggling with high functioning depression or something similar. What is the first step that you recommend that they do if they really want to help them? Like, some people don't want to admit it. They don't want to be helped. Like, I guess, how do you deal with these situations?
You know, a lot of people don't want to share. They don't want to seem like less than. They don't want to seem like they're disappointing. And so I think that letting them know that no matter what, they're not a disappointment. One of the symptoms of depression is feeling guilt and shame, and you internalize blame. And so I think starting off with, you know, if you slow down, I would understand. If you expressed how you felt, you wouldn't disappoint me. So like, really helping them challenge that core belief that they are not worthy if they are not pathologically productive can be so powerful. And you see this a lot with moms. Moms are so guilty all the time. Like, I don't want to let my kid down, my boss down, my team down. But you know, the people in your life, they want you to slow down. They want you to ask for help. It makes them feel good when they feel useful to you, right? It's no fun to be around someone who doesn't need you all the time, right? And so I think that could be very powerful information for an individual because they don't believe that. They seriously believe that they don't have that permission to slow down, that they're letting others down. They feel guilty. So like reassure them of that. And they may not believe you the first time, but over time, you keep repeating it, it'll sink in. And also don't necessarily wait for them to break down, right? The same goes for, you know, regular people as it is for healthcare. Why are we waiting for people to break down? When we see the signs, we need to intervene. So if you can tell when someone has lost joy, when they don't have spark, you know, like check in with them. There's this meme, check in with your strong friends. But it's the truth. You know, everyone thinks that people who are the rocks don't ever experience breakdown, but rocks chip, right? They crack.
Absolutely.
And two things can be true. You can be strong, but you can also have challenges. And, you know, check in with your friends. And when they say that they're fine, follow up. Don't accept that. Follow up with, how are you really doing? How are you really doing it all?
Yeah. Can you give us more simple scripts that we should say? What you said in the beginning was great, but like, yeah, maybe repeat it. What are some scripts or some things that we should say to these people in our lives?
You know, one of the things that's great is, and people say this to me all the time, you're doing so many things. Like, how are you doing them all so well? And I used to say, well, I have a great team. But now I say, I have a great team and I am really tired. It's hard. Sometimes I don't even know how I do it. And then there's a relief because people are like, phew, good. There's nothing wrong with me because like she's doing it all, making it look easy, but she's tired too, right?
Yeah.
And it builds community, right? Like there's a vulnerability that happens when you share, when you're not just like buttoned up. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. No, don't worry. I could do it myself.
Yeah. Oh, you're saying like be vulnerable first, be honest first. And then it opens it up for them to be honest as well.
It does. It allows community and connection.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because if you can't relate and it seems as if you're just like checking in, but you're not sharing, then the person's not going to want to share either. And it's okay to empathize in that way. Right? It's an empathic intervention in psychiatry talk and therapy talk, right? Yeah. By you saying, sometimes I feel tired, but I don't want to let people down either. That is an intervention because you're putting yourself in their shoes and they feel like, okay, if you're sharing, then, you know, you're not unlovable. You're not unworthy. So I'm not unlovable or unworthy either. And don't expect them to share automatically. Don't expect them to say, okay, you're sharing, I'm going to share. That is not the way that many people are built. Sometimes they will just listen.
Yeah, it just takes time.
It'll sink in. And the more they hear it, the more that they may feel eventually comfortable. And also they may never share with you, but they don't feel alone in it when you share, when you show that you're vulnerable and you're willing to listen.
I love that so much. It gives us more ideas because I think a lot of people kind of go from the say someone's like a really ambitious person, hard worker, people just say like, you're amazing. You're doing more than I could ever have. It's kind of like it goes unsaid. The thought that, oh, I think you're doing, you might be like suffering or you're doing too much. But it comes out as like compliments because I don't think people know how to approach it sometimes.
I use a lot of humor. And one thing I hear all the time is, you're a rock star. You're killing it. And I say, oh, no, no, no. I'm not killing it. It's killing me. And they just laugh.
I love that.
I'm like, this is eventually going to kill me. I need to slow down. And they laugh. And it's like, wow, like you're human too, right? It's
a point of joy.
Making someone else laugh and smile. I just got a point that day, right?
You are very productive. You have a lot of accolades. And now that you've kind of like learned all this about joy and the five V's, how do you approach life now? Do you still have those ambitions? Do you approach goals in a more balanced way? What is life like for you now?
I have my ups and downs, and I think that it's a process. Healing is not linear. Sometimes you may take 2 steps forward and 5 steps backwards, right? I mean, the book writing process has been something of a a journey for me, an experience for me. I've learned so much because writing my book, first of all, it's re-traumatizing because I talk about a lot of painful things I went through. And I also like, you know, I use patient cases, but disguise them. But, you know, I remember the real patients I'm talking about. And that, you know, when you have been a therapist for years and you've had your patients for years, you feel what they feel, you know, you become a part of their social network, you know, so to speak, you like, you're part of their community. So that has been really a journey for me, an experience for me, even doing the audiobook, you know, saying this stuff out loud in a full of a room full of people that I don't know, again, also a process. So this entire book writing experience was, you know, a lesson to me in learning and healing and moving steps forward and then steps backwards. And that's okay. You know,
yeah.
There are times you're going to be more healed and other times you're not going to be as healed. Right. And I've learned to radically accept that, and I'm not perfect. And, you know, writing a book and putting it out into the world is also challenging my sense of success and perfectionism. You know, mm-hmm. My partner says, Judith, you are by all means successful. Like, like you're good. You don't have to, but you know, the inner dialogue is the challenge for me. It's like, well, am I? And what if the book fails? And what, but yeah. Then, you know, my agent said something really powerful. She goes, if one person read this book and felt that you were speaking to them and it changed their lives, you've done it. And I'm like, well, thank you. I hope the publishers feel that way too.
Of course. Yeah, I get it. It's hard to, like, you know, all of these lessons, but it's hard to actually put it into practice when you still have all these, like, of course you want the book to do well. Of course you want to, right? Like, it's almost like it's wired in you, but a part of you has to learn to detach and not care as much as you used to.
I do a lot of like inner child work. And, you know, my dad would be like, Judy is the one child we don't have to worry about. We're from Trinidad. So I always imitate them with the accents on social media. They love it. They used to hate it. And they're like, we don't sound like that. And now they're like, oh, you're getting better. But, you know, I have to tell myself, Judy, you're good. You know, you did good. Don't worry. Like, I have to talk in that voice because I had the accent when I was younger.
Yeah.
And that, you know, is so powerful, you know, like talking to your inner child. As adults, we all know what it's like to be a child. So you can always talk to yourself. That's why the self-validation, the self-venting is so important. Talk to yourself more. I talk to myself all the time.
So when you say venting, is it just talking and writing? Are there other ways that people vent, or is it just those two?
It's how you express it. So I'm in New York City. A lot of my clients are artists, and some of them, they feel more comfortable like putting together something artistic, right? That's venting. You're expressing your feelings. I have so many clients who are in fashion. So I say, wear your colors, you know, like how you're feeling that day, wear it. And they'll rock in. I'm like, oh, you're feeling really confident today, right? And they start laughing, right?
Love that.
So there are different ways to do it. People who are, you know, faith-based, they pray, you know, or they meditate. There's no right or wrong. We're all so unique. We're all so different. Understanding how you vent and what feels authentic for you is so important. There's no right or wrong way. Now, when you're venting to others, there are do's and don'ts, right? You don't want to vent and trauma dump and like the person's like just in their office eating their lunch and you come in and you're like, oh, did you hear what they said in the meeting? And you're like, whoa, like, okay. You know, did you ask permission? Did you check in to see how they were doing? You know, did you check if it was a good time? Maybe they're having a hard day and they just don't want to deal with you right now, right? Are you venting to people who are in a lower position of power to you, like your kids? You shouldn't be trauma dumping on your kids or venting to your kids, because sometimes your kids worry about you. They'll be like, oh yeah, okay, mommy. And they're like, they want you to vent.
Yeah,
they want to feel special, like
you're
confiding, but then they're like worried about you, right? But you have no idea because you just trauma dumped all over your kids, right? Or your employees, you know, they'll say, oh, sure, boss. But then they're like, man, like, I really didn't want to hear that, but I don't want to get fired. So I guess I got to listen to this person rant and rave. So really be mindful about that, right? Check in, make sure it's appropriate. So there, you know, I give the do's and don'ts as well.
Vent in private.
Yes.
You work on mental health with like major institutions, like including Congress or the White House. What are the ways that you would like to see mental health, the way we see mental health and maybe mental health policy change for the future? Like, where should we be headed and how do we make that change?
I do a lot of advocacy work with members of Congress, and I taught a mental health workshop on the job, managing stress workshop at the White House for the president of the United States and their office. And when I tell you, talk about people who love what they do. I mean, how cool is it to be like, I work at the White House, I work with the president.
Yeah.
So they love their jobs, but their jobs are stressful, right? Like you're running the office that is basically the most powerful office in the universe, right? Like the United States is the most influential nation. You know, you can debate that, but it is the truth. And, you know, people are, they love their jobs, but the jobs sometimes, you know, right? They're killing it at the job, but the job is killing them too, right?
Yeah.
So I had to really, you know, put myself in their shoes and practice a lot of empathy, you know, because I thought, you know, being a doctor is stressful, but I mean, I don't have to deal with wars and crisis and protests and, you know, economic downfalls. I don't have to deal with that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I really go back to the basics with them. And I break the ice with a question, like how many of you have ever worked through lunch and yet really had to pee or to do number two, and but you kept on going, you held it in, and they just laugh. So I like to deflate, you know, because I break it down to like third grade humor, you know, for very high powered people, because I work with kids and adults. And I'll tell you, the poop and the pee jokes work every time, no matter what age. And they'll be like, yeah. And then they realize that they are humans doing, they're not humans being, and how important it is to regulate yourself, to check in with yourself, to understand the signs of your happiness so that you can go out and do good in the world. I truly believe that this mental health work can change the world, because if people are happy and the evidence shows it, you make better decisions, you make less mistakes, people like you more, you have more empathy, you know, you just, the world actually becomes better. You know, like if you look at dictators, they're not happy. They may have like $5 billion dollars worth of property, but they're still unhappy because they want more. They're never satisfied, right? That they are chasing this elusive idea of happiness. They're not really happy. But if we can each improve our happiness, every person, every citizen, we're kinder to each other.
Yeah.
We look out for our fellow man. We're not as selfish because we're not chasing price tags. We're chasing priceless. You know, the world is so much better. I like to frame it that way, that when you invest in your happiness, you're actually creating change in the world. And it's so powerful because it doesn't have to be, you know, fixing a crisis in a part of the world. Fix the crisis inside first. Mm-hmm. Take care of that first. It's really difficult to manage a high stress job and to regulate other people and other problems when you're not regulated. It's so powerful.
Yeah. I think that's, it's so simple, but this idea that if you are happy and you have peace within, there would be so much less war in the world. Like we wouldn't have that need to like fight. We wouldn't have those like people who get triggered and this and that opposing. I totally agree with you. I think someone like you can communicate that on a larger scale to the people in power.
It does help to have the multiple degrees. It's like, okay, a doctor is telling me to slow down. I guess I'm going to slow down. But if their partner tells them, you need to slow down, you don't eat. They're like, you don't get it. I have a very important job. And when a doctor comes in and says, do you know that your decisions about your happiness impact the nation? And they're like, oh, okay, I got to listen.
That's your purpose. That's why you're here. Okay, Dr. Judith, if you can leave our audience with one final takeaway today, what would that be?
I love my mantras. You know, I live by them because my dad's a pastor. But I want you to ask yourself every day, today, was I a human being or was I a human doing, right? And how do I fix that the next day? Like, the day is gone. How do I get more points of joy the next day by understanding the science of my happiness, right? I want you to understand the science of your happiness and try to get those that points of joy. You can't change the past, but you can always schedule joy in the future, right? That's the fifth V vision. So if today was not a day where you were a human being, you were a human doing, tomorrow you can plan your joy based on the science of your happiness. There's always tomorrow.
Love it. Thank you so much. Where can we find you online?
Well, thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun. And I got several points of joy from talking with you. You can find me online at Dr. Judith Joseph And I'm there on all the socials under that name and drjudithjoseph.com. And you can buy my book wherever books are sold. The name of it is High Functioning, and it's all about uncovering hidden depression and reclaiming your joy.
Amazing. Thank you so much. I so enjoyed today's conversation. It's something that everyone needs to hear, literally. It's just for all human beings.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Thanks so much for listening to The Lavender Lifestyle. If you like the podcast, please show your support by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also subscribe to our podcast YouTube channel at youtube.com/lavender lifestyle. Lastly, follow me on YouTube and Instagram @lavender for more content on creating your dream life. Sending you so much love.